What follows may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
The world is full of stories. Stories of mysteries. Of curiosities. Of oddities. Join Kat and Jethro Gilligan Toth for the strange, the bizarre, the unexpected, as they lift the lid and cautiously peer inside the box of oddities.
We are quickly approaching our 500th episode.
Yes.
Which is remarkable.
It is.
And throughout the years, we've dealt with many, many topics and several different holiday-related themes.
Yeah, I was so concerned that you were going to be talking about our 500th episode, and I was like, dude, I can only focus on the holidays right now. Don't do this to me. What are you doing? And okay, so, all right. Yes, holidays. We've talked about some weird stuff.
And we thought we'd relive a few of those moments. Now, I touched on this lightly in a recent episode, but did a deeper dive on this topic 2-3 years ago, and that is Santa Claus's skeleton.
What a wonderful time of year to bring this gem back.
It is, of course, days away from Christmas, and I have an appropriate story.
You have a holiday-themed story?
Yes.
I'm very excited about this.
It has to do with the skeletal remains of Santa Claus.
Okay. I'm not sure where you're going with this.
Okay. All right. Well, let me clarify. Santa Claus, of course, is based on St. Nicholas.
Yeah.
A real person.
Sure.
St. Nicholas was a bishop who lived and died in what is now Turkey in the first half of the 4th century. He was born very wealthy. He was a very generous man, and he enjoyed giving people gifts.
Sure, that makes a lot of sense.
There's a few stories about that. There was one story where there was a widow who lived with her children in a house, like a poor house at the time, and he went by in the middle of the night and left 3 little bags of gold coins.
Aww.
On the windowsill for them.
And then the next day, Elf's dad came by and he took their books away and she was all, but the children love the books.
Another story in the legend is that there was a house of ill repute
in the area.
And he would go by and throw gold coins in the window to support the prostitution industry, I guess, at the time.
I mean, there are other ways to support it.
Yeah. Well, maybe he was just paying his bills.
Maybe.
Could be. We don't know.
Yep.
But his legend went far beyond his generosity.
Getting his candy cane wet, you know what I mean?
There was a horrible situation in the city where he lived at the time. A butcher had killed 3 children and carved them up and stored their remains in a vat of brine. And legend has it that he raised the children from the dead.
Oh.
Now, I believe the whole gold coin in the hooker's window.
Right.
I get that.
Yeah.
But the children being raised from lumps of flesh that have been pickled, a little hard for me to believe. Mm. Yet, that's part of the legend.
Okay. I did not know that. That's really interesting.
His legend spread far and wide. Mostly because of semen.
Again, we're back to the house of ill repute.
No, sailors. That's what I meant by that.
Oh.
They believed that St. Nicholas could keep them safe on lengthy sea voyages. They'd often cry out his name in rough seas. A star, she's a brewing. Jolly old St. Nick, save me. Like that. That's what they would do.
Is that what it would sound like?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, maybe it was a little bit different, but but the legend was if they called out the name of St. Nicholas, the rough seas would disappear and they would turn smooth as glass. So it was sailors who started spreading the word of St. Nicholas around.
Sailors have spread a lot of stuff. Saying, please continue.
Yep. They were the ones responsible for spreading the word of the cult of St. Nicholas around the world.
Okay.
People all over the world knew about St. Nicholas. And, you know, this was really, you know, like 1600 years ago.
Right. Patron saint of sailors and hookers.
Yep. Something like that. Within a very short time, less than 100 years, the bishop was worshipped as a saint, mostly because of sailors. Ports were named after St. Nicholas. Islands, inlets, probably thousands of babies, were named after St. Nick. Because of this, he became one of the best-loved saints of all Christendom. So how he became Santa Claus is a whole different thing because, you know, there's a bit of a leap there from St. Nicholas,
right?
An historic figure, historical figure, to Santa Claus, who is, you know, a mythical icon. I mean, that's what some people say.
Right.
Historians believe probably it's owed to the December 6th Feast of St. Nicholas. That's what kind of placed St. Nicholas around what is now the Christmas or holiday season. St. Nicholas is a feast, the Feast of St. Nicholas.
Bet a lot of those ladies thought he was.
Now, we all think of Santa Claus as, you know, a jolly old man wearing a big red suit. Where did the red suit come from? Probably from St. Nicholas's red bishop robes.
Oh, okay.
They interpreted that, changed it, and it became a, you know, a red suit with fur trim, apple bottom jeans. Now, what about the name Santa Claus? This is the part that I found.
I require artwork that shows St. Nick in apple bottom jeans.
And boots maybe, with a fur?
Yeah, maybe red jeans. You know, red denim is a thing. And just like just a fat booty, mm-hmm. like popping up out of those jeans a little bit, like super low rise, little poop, poop, poop. Yeah. So you get a little poop, poop out of the top.
All right, artist freaks, you've been given your assignment from Kat. Draw us a picture of Santa wearing apple bottom jeans and boots with a fur. Anyway, Santa Claus. Where did we get the name Santa Claus? This is really quite interesting. It's derived from how the Dutch immigrants of New Amsterdam pronounced his name. Not St. Nicholas, but Sinterklaas.
Oh.
Sinterklaas. St. Nicholas, Sinterklaas.
Sinterklaas
Nicholas. That's how it sounded to them. So they would call him Sinterklaas. So it became Santa Claus. The legend of St. Nicholas is a powerful legend, as so was his corpse, by the way.
Oh?
Let's talk about the corpse of St. Nick.
Yes, please.
Now, we all know the story about the bodies of saints and martyrs in Christian history. Since its beginning, they've been very important to the religion. The earliest churches were built on the tombs of saints.
Right.
And pieces of their corpses, referred to as religious relics, were believed to hold a certain holy power, and mm-hmm. still do. It was believed that using these religious relics would help you connect and possibly communicate with higher powers through them. Kind of like a bone cell phone or something.
Like holding a shell up to your ear. Yeah,
kind of, I guess.
And yeah. Except it's like femur.
Yeah. They believe that the holy relics would help manifest the holy forces on earth. They could heal you, they could protect you, and, of course, perform miracles. Sometimes the miracles of saints concerned their own bodies. We've heard stories about saints whose corpses did not corrupt.
Exactly.
That they refused to decay. Some dripped blood decades, even centuries after death, and some would ooze some kind of banjo. And some would ooze some kind of inexplicable substance.
That's just called decomp. Well, and
yeah, but it's different because it smelled like roses. This is what happened with jolly old Saint Nick.
Oh.
Santa's skeletal remains. Not too long after his death, a liquid started secreting from the bones. It was said that it smelled like roses and had the power to heal.
See, I would have thought like winter mint or something like that.
Right. This was taken as a sign.
Is this gingerbread?
That Nicholas in his corpse was holy, and thousands of people began flocking to his tomb in the port city of Myra in Turkey.
See, just because something smells good doesn't mean that it's holy. Like gangrene smells like almonds, guys. That doesn't mean that.
You want to rub it on your wounds.
Right.
Word quickly spread And two other ports were very jealous of Myra. They were getting all the attention because of St. Nicholas's body. So what they did was there became this great competition for holy relics at this time. In fact, there was even an underground black market relics trade.
Oh, geez. Of course there was.
Yeah. Merchants, even monks, would sneak into the crypts of churches and steal them some holy bones. Surprisingly, this was not considered a sin.
No?
No, because they believe, like a lot like King Arthur's sword in the stone, relics could only be removed by the right person. So if they were able to steal the relics, they were meant to steal the relics.
That is a wonderful way to get away with crimes. To be like, no, because if the universe didn't want me to have stolen it, it wouldn't have let me.
So this is what happened.
I'm supposed to have your riding lawnmower.
This is what happened to jolly old St. Nick. A group of merchants and sailors from Bari raided the city and ultimately the tomb. Apparently, they wanted to compete with the Venetians who had just finished stealing the bones of St. Mark.
The patron saint of blinds?
I'm not sure. They smuggled his bones. This is what they did with St. Mark. They smuggled his bones out in a basket of pork from Alexandria in the year 827. The Barians had heard that Myra had fallen to the Turks, and that left St. Nicholas's tomb unguarded. So they had heard that Myra had fallen to the Turks, and that had left St. Nicholas's tomb unguarded, the tomb of jolly old St. Nick. So they thought that they needed a saint for themselves. Of course, you know, any reputable port has its own saint.
Sure.
And a Barian clerk, in an account shortly after the theft, wrote that three ships from Bari sailed into the harbor in the spring of 1087. There were 47 Barians, and they were all well-armed. They got off the ship and immediately tromped to the Church of St. Nicholas, where they politely asked to see the tomb. The monks were a little suspicious and wanted to know what they were up to.
Is this some sort of weird tour?
Yeah, it's the middle of the night. But rather than explain, the Barians just tied the monks up and smashed their way into the sarcophagus. There they found the skeletal remains of Santa Claus submerged in that ooze. Reports said that a heavenly perfume wafted up from the bones. It was described in one account as, quote, licking at the venerable priests as if in insatiable embrace. And so the bones of St. Nick quickly made their way to Bari. Now, the stealing of St. Nick's bones made the men who stole them and the thieves that were involved local heroes. They became famous in the area for stealing the bones of St. Nick. And for centuries after they died, their descendants would receive a percentage of all offerings that were given on the feast's day. For hundreds of years, their descendants got money because they stole the bones of St. Nicholas.
Oh, okay.
They even built a new basilica to hold the remains. And throughout the Middle Ages, thousands of pilgrims would visit. They even have an elaborate festival, a Feast of Translation, which celebrates the day that the stolen bones of St. Nicholas arrived in Bari. And one of the highlights of the festival, this is weird, is the rector will lean into St. Nicholas's sarcophagus and draw off some of the liquid that's in there in the tomb.
Because it's Santa juice.
The Santa juice. He puts it in a crystal vial and then mixes it with holy water and pours it into decorated bottles that are sold in Bari's gift shops.
Okay.
It's thought to be a curative drink.
Oh, no, they don't drink it.
They drink it.
Oh, no.
Drinking Santa juice.
Stop that. Mm.
So Bari's been well known as the place for St. Nicholas's bones. But the Venetians also claim that they have the bones of St. Nick. They say their own sailors visited Myra during the first crusade and stole Nicholas's remains, and they've been in Venice ever since that time. So for centuries,
someone's got fake bones.
that's what we need to determine. For centuries, both Bari and Venice have claimed to have the bones of St. Nicholas. In 1953, officials allowed a university professor to examine for the first time the remains of the tomb in Bari. It had been opened for the first time in 800 years. They hadn't opened the tomb. The examination found the bones wet, fragile, fragmented, with many of them missing.
That sounds like me after 2020. Just kind of like, oh, I'm fragmented.
He concluded that they belonged to a man who died in his 70s, but other than that, they could say little more. 40 years later, scientists studied the bones in Venice, and they found out that the bones in Venice and the bones in Bari came from the same skeleton. So their thought is the relics in Venice and the ones in Bari had come from the same skeleton. They theorized that the sailors from Venice had stolen what was left in Myra after the Barians had done their initial raiding of the tomb. Apparently, they didn't get all of Santa's bones out. So for the original site in Myra, all that is left is an empty tomb. And they kind of want their bones back, please and thank you.
Sure.
Back in 2009, Turkish government officials said it was considering a formal request for the return of St. Nicholas's remains. The bones have very little religious significance in Turkey, since 99% of the population is Muslim. But there's still a sense that stealing St. Nick's bones was a cultural violation.
Sure.
Plus, of course, it would make a really great tourist attraction. I guess a lot of people go to the original St. Nicholas's tomb in Turkey and are horribly disappointed when they find out that the tomb is empty.
But I'm sorry. Are you telling me that TripAdvisor hasn't been updated since the Barians came and stole his bones?
Well, it takes a while. Local officials tried to compensate by this. This is not a joke. They decided that they would try to, since they didn't have the bones of Saint Nick anymore, and they didn't want the tourists to be disappointed, they put a giant plastic lit Santa Claus outside the tomb.
Nice.
But I guess people weren't buying that. So Santa remains scattered over the Mediterranean area, pretty much. Now, Santa Claus, of course, is an international cultural icon these days. But the myth is rooted in the bones of a man who died 16 centuries ago. And his remains are now scattered across Europe and the Middle East.
Wow.
Merry Christmas.
That is crazy interesting.
Weird, huh? I love the Sinterklaas. Sinterklaas, that, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that part the best.
And now, that thing in the middle. It's not uncommon these days for children to write letters to Santa this time of year. But during the 1800s at Christmas time, Santa wrote to the children instead of the other way around. Santa told kids what naughty things they needed to stop doing to guarantee they'd receive presents. Santa even gave specific examples, like, hey, you broke a vase, you stole a biscuit, you punched a street urchin in the face. This was to prove that Santa was watching at all times. Merry creepy Christmas.
The Box of Oddities. At a frequency so high, only your dog can understand. Support for The Box of Oddities is provided in part by listeners like you on Patreon. You can support us too. Go to patreon.com/boxofoddities. Thank you.
You know, it's one of my favorite things to do as we are within the holiday season to explore some holidays from around the world
and
traditions from around the world that maybe we aren't familiar with. So here we go. Wales. One of the places that my ancestors are from. It's a place very close to my heart, very special to me. I want to go to Swansea very much. Anyway, there is a holiday tradition in Wales. And as the legend goes, during the holidays, the dead horse, Mary Lloyd, rises from the grave and goes door to door, challenging those who open the door to a rhyming battle of wits.
Wait, a dead horse comes to life and then challenge you to a rap battle?
Pretty much, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yep. So what happens is a group of celebrators, very similar to like the Skecklers that we talked about a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
So a group of celebrators will take around this heavily decorated horse skull, knock on doors, and when the door opens, the group will sing Mary Lloyd's Challenge, then start a Puinco or a call and response rhyme battle. Basically, you would start a rhyme, the person inside has to respond with a rhyme, and it goes back and forth until someone fails.
Do the rhymes have to be a put down or an insult?
No, they're not necessarily talking smack, like on 8 Mile. But
because that's what I picture, a dead equestrian 8 Mile.
Yeah, no. But there are some rhymes that we know about that you might sing to the dead horse. Wine comes in at the mouth, and love comes in at the eye. That's all we shall know for truth before we grow old and die. I lift the glass to my mouth. I look at you, and I sigh.
Wow.
Yeah.
Lay some fat beats behind that, and you got something.
Yeah. I like it. Moving on, though, to another traditional, legendary holiday guy is the Caranculos, which seems to be kind of a demon version of a Sasquatch.
Ooh.
Now, versions of this fella can be found in Greece, Bulgaria, Turkey, Serbia, Albania, Bosnia, and Cyprus. Now, the Greek term for this guy is Kalikensaros, and that is speculated to come from the Greek Kalos Kentauros, which means beautiful centaur.
Huh.
Although a lot of people argue with that and say that it actually comes from the Turkish Kara Konjolos, which means werewolf or vampire, from Kara, black, and Konkolos, bloodsucker werewolf.
Oh my God. Nothing says happy holidays like a bloodsucking werewolf.
In Greek mythology, they say that this monster saws the trunk of the world tree so that it will collapse along with the world. But during the final part of Christmas, this guy gets distracted and comes up to the surface. They forget about the tree and they just want to bring trouble to all the mortals. Many Greeks imagine this guy as being tall, hairy, with burning red eyes, goats or donkey ears, monkey's arms, huge tongues, which doesn't sound like a beautiful centaur, if you ask me.
No, I'm going with the Turkish translation on that one.
They also allegedly eat frogs and speak with a lisp.
These frogs are delicious.
Ghosts and demons are all over the place during the 12 days of Christmas, and the Caranculos joins the chaos. So he hangs out at night waiting for an unsuspecting victim to wander by, a la a lot of episodes of Criminal Minds that we've seen recently. And then he jumps on their back and he demands a piggyback ride until dawn.
But he's like the size of a Sasquatch.
Yeah.
You couldn't even carry him to the next corner.
But
let alone all the way through the night into the early morning hours.
He also might lure people out of their homes by mimicking the voices of the people that they love, which I think is straight up terrifying.
And then threaten them if he doesn't get a piggyback ride?
That's correct, yes.
Wow.
In Turkey, the version of this guy hangs out on street corners during the winter, waiting for someone to walk by, and then he asks them a question. And if the answer that they give doesn't include the word black, the Caranculos will strike that person dead. In Albania, their version is called the Kukuth, and they are kind of a gypsy undead corpse who goes around in January with heavy chains all over his body, killing people with their deadly breath.
There's no winning.
So he's not so much into the trivia,
right?
More of just a halitosis kind of situation.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. It's a festive Yuletide Sasquatch with halitosis.
The Bulgarian name of the demon is Karakon Jewel, and they are very human-like, except they have a very hairy body, a tail, some horns, one eye sometimes, and sometimes they just stand on a single leg, or sometimes they have a horse head. So not as human-like as maybe originally I made it out to sound like. They could be shapeshifters, and that's the thing about this version, is that it can appear in any number of ways. But the thing is, in Bulgaria, they don't just sit around and complain about their murderous, shape-shifting Yuletide monsters. They don costumes that cover most of their body, that are decorated with wooden masks of animals, and they wear large bells attached to their belts. And then they walk around in a parade, scaring the spirits away with their costumes and the sounds of their bells.
All right. Well, that sounds somewhat festive.
Yes, that I actually have great interest in and would love to go see. Mm. The hairy frog-eating horse head guy, not so much, but this festival sounds neat. So again, he appears in a lot of different regions in a lot of different ways, but overall, it's pretty much the same idea. Moving right along to the Alpine regions of southern Germany and Austria, now we're talking about Frau Perchta. Frau Perchta shows up during the nights of the 12 days of Christmas. And traditionally, she enforces the community rules and traditions and or rewards kind, hardworking folks and punishes the lazy. Frau Perchta has this long history that's actually really interesting. She's also known as Bertha and has been called the Spinstubenfrau. And so, okay, so the concept of Perchta and Bertha is that she is one and the same, but two different entities. So she appears in one light, and then her flip side, you know, because everything has a dark and a light side. She is Bertha, who represents fertility and all kinds of good stuff. And then Perchta, who is kind of the opposite of that. Not so bright and cheery.
So kind of like the heat miser and the snow miser from A Year Without Santa Claus.
I recognize those names, but I actually don't know what you're talking about. So
we're talking about a classic Rankin Bass production from the early 70s.
You're my favorite relic from the 70s. this actually has an interesting history in Christianity coming into play. And when paganism was a more prevalent part of this region, Bertha was a goddess that a lot of women worshipped. And as paganism was being pushed out and Christianity was taken over, they turned Bertha into a dual goddess who would also punish you to try to make her scary so that people wouldn't worship her so much.
Ah.
So Perchta allegedly has a beaked nose made of iron, and she carries a cane and kind of resembles a decrepit old crone, a la the beginning of Beauty and the Beast. You know what I'm getting at.
Uh-huh.
Now, she flies through the night sky, attended by an army of lost souls, including the demonic-looking Perchten, her army of servants. And she's super judgmental. So she wants you to make sure you have all of your work done and that your house is way clean.
Uh-huh.
And also, you have to have porridge out for her.
I see.
Now, if you don't have all of your flax spun by the 12th night, which is January 6th, also Richard Gere, ladies who haven't finished their weaving are punished. There are stories in Germany, Austria, and Switzerland of Frau Perchta trampling and setting fire to half-spun fibers.
She seems nice.
And if you've not left out her bowl of porridge, or if your home is unkempt, she's also sometimes known as the belly slitter. So she has a knife hidden under her skirt, and she'll cut open your stomach, disembowel you, and replace your innards with straw, pebbles, and trash.
Really? This is quite a tradition.
And then she'll stomp your unfinished work with her deformed goose feet.
Wow. Wow. Who came up with this shit?
Happy holidays.
Holy crap.
Anyway, that's what I have about Perchta.
Whew. All of those things are alarming, but you really ended on a low note there.
That was
something else. So happy holidays, everyone.
Yeah.
We hope in all sincerity that your holidays are wonderful, have been wonderful, will be wonderful.
We're continuing with our holiday tradition of making Christmas Eve Big Macs and then locking ourselves in our home and not opening the door for 2 days.
I love that tradition.
Yeah.
It's far better than having the belly slitter come over and trample me with her goose feet. We'll see you next time, freaks.
Until then, keep flying that freak flag.
And fly it proudly, you beautiful freak.
And so, let it be known that the Box of Oddities belongs to you, and its fate is in your hands. Therefore, it's been requested by those to whom I report to beseech you for assistance. We ask but one thing of you, to provide a 5-star rating and a positive review. True. That is, 2 things. However, 'tis merely a 5-star rating and a positive review. Also, subscribe to us. Okay, so 3 things is all we ask. 3 things and 3 things only. TheBoxOfOddities.com. On Facebook at Facebook.com/Box of Oddities Podcast. On Twitter at Box of Oddities. And Instagram at Box of Oddities Podcast. Copyright 2021, all rights reserved.
Well, no, that's not what I want to say. Okay.